News Talk on demand. Interruption-free audio, where you want it, when you want it.
Good morning. This is Garden Talk. We are now a two-hour show for the season. Of course, as always, Rick Van Dyvendyke from Dutch Growers is here to answer your questions. You can give us a call or a text at 1-877-332-8255. And, Rick, we have had some very patient people on the line waiting for us, so we'll just dive right in. We have James in Warman. Good morning, James. Thanks for waiting for us.
Oh, hello. Yes, hi, Rick. I have roughly about a 12, 13-foot spruce tree that I need to move and transplant to a different area. And yes. I'm just wondering if now is an okay time, or would the ground frost still be, you know, fairly significant?
In a lot of places, I mean, you could probe the soil with a piece of rebar and just see how far the frost is down. But if the frost is gone, the earlier you can move it, the better. You can move the spruce trees right up. Basically, because you have to move that with the machine, basically, okay?
I got a tree spade rented.
Yeah. So basically what I always say is you can move spruce trees anytime except for the J months. So June and July is no-nos, okay?
Okay.
So you can move any time other than June and July. So and you're basically fringing into April and into August, depending on if you get your new growth. If in August you have to make sure the buds are set for next year, then you can move it. In the spring, you don't want to make sure the buds haven't bursted, and then you have to stop, okay?
Oh, so, perfect.
But if the frost is on the ground, go for it.
Okay, and then roughly, based on about a 12-foot tree, how deep would the roots be on a spruce tree? Are they fairly shallow, or are they fairly deep?
They're fairly shallow. Basically, this is what I always say, so that you basically, for every inch of trunk, it takes about 10 inches of a width on the tree spade, okay?
Okay.
So if you have a 40-inch, right, tree spade, you can go to a 4-inch trunk.
Oh, perfect. Okay.
On your spruce tree.
Okay. No, great, Rick. Thanks a million. I really appreciate your help there.
Okay. There you go.
Thanks, James.
Okay. Bye.
All right. We have Tanya waiting for us here. Good morning. What's your question for Rick today?
Good morning. I feel like I've got a bit of a similar question about a lady a few calls back, but I just got the tail end of it, so I'm going to kind of re-ask the same question.
Why not?
We just had a beautiful, beloved tree removed as well because of that darn fungus.
Yep.
And it was a tall tree, provided lots of shade, southwest exposure. So what can I replace that tree with, Rick? Something that's going to be tall, also fast growing, because this was just a beautiful tree. And there was a shade, I think, that probably I'm going to miss the most.
Yes.
Yeah.
So if you want the shade, then there's a couple of trees you can put in there. Like I was telling earlier before, one's called Spring Snow Flowering Crab, because it has no fruit and has lots of white flowers. It grows pretty quickly. Another one is the Ivory Sook Lilac. Not quite as fast growing, but, you know, as long as you fertilize every season, it'll grow fairly quickly. And it has white flowers and gives nice shade. Now, if you got more room, okay, then you could put in, are you in a city situation or a country situation?
No, we're in the city, but we have a big backyard. We're in a cul-de-sac pilot, so.
Yeah. So you have lots of room.
Yes.
So if you have lots of room, I mean, you could also, you will have seeds with them. I mean, you could put things like an autumn blaze maple, or then it gets large, but it doesn't drop seeds down, but it gives you great color in the fall as well and grows very, very fast.
Oh, nice. Okay.
Okay.
Perfect. Awesome. Thank you so much. I really appreciate that, Rick.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Tanya.
Hi.
Okay. We have Norris on the line here. Good morning.
Hey, good morning.
What's your question for Rick today?
Well, I kind of mixed up on this fertilizer stuff. We've been using 2020 on our tomatoes and peppers and lettuce and stuff we started in the house.
Yes.
This morning you say that they should be small numbers. What are them small numbers?
Yeah, anything below 10, okay?
Okay.
Anything below 10 on all three numbers, really. The problem with using 2020, especially using it full strength, is that you're going to make them stretch like crazy with the 20 phosphorus. It'll make them go really spindly. And so and high nitrogen, you got to be careful. You don't want to burn the new roots off too, right? So unless you go to like a quarter strength, okay, like, you know, go dilute it like big time.
Oh, you can do that.
Yep, you can do that as well. Like if it tells you to put so many mils per liter of water, take that by 25%, right?
So
yeah, and we've got all the plants as teetotalers. They're on the alfalfa tea, so.
Perfect. If you, did, if you use the teetotaler, that's all you need.
Above the alfalfa?
Yes, all you need to use is alfalfa pellets. You don't need to use 20-20-20.
Oh.
Okay.
Just use alfalfa and not this other 10 either?
Not indoors, if you don't have to. Just use alfalfa pellet tea. That's all you need.
Oh, great.
Okay.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay.
Thanks, Morris. Okay, and Bernie on the line here. Good morning, Bernie. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you.
Good, thanks. What's your question for Rick today?
I have a small cedar tree that's it's quite old, but it's not all that big. But the last year it started really growing well, and now the mule deer have come into the yard, and they've eaten it right. There's not a whole lot left on there.
Yep.
Is there any chance it might come back?
Yeah, but it'll take about 3 to 5 years.
Okay, so what do I need to do to make it come back?
Fertilize. It'll put all its growth on in June, okay? So you need to fertilize starting May the 10th. And
okay.
I would suggest using a 30-10-10. Use about 5 gallons of water, mix with 30-10-10, and do that every 3 weeks from May the 10th until July the 15th, then you stop.
Okay.
And then next year, put a fence around it, a snow fence, anything. Chicken wire fence, something to keep them coming, because they'll keep coming back. They know it's there.
They've never. It's been there for about 15 years, and they've never eaten it before. But this year we have mule deer that we never had before, and they seem to like the.
And now they'll remember for next year. They'll come back.
Yes,
like I have. I have one tree in my acreage that the mule deer come back and rut every year with their antlers. They seem to remember the spot.
Oh yes,
it's
so
their favorite one.
Put a fence around it.
Okay, thank you very much.
Okay.
Thanks, Bernie.
Okay, bye-bye.
Okay, we have a couple minutes before our first break of the hour, so let's do a bit of a rapid fire here for the text line. Ted in Regina says, have some bulbs and self-seeding seeds. When can they go in? Also, have some rhubarb that's become very thin. How can I get it more sturdy?
Okay, more rhubarb, use an organic fertilizer with that one. They don't like high nitrogen.
Okay.
And they also like a dry, okay? Do not have a wet area at all. If it's in a wet area, you need to move it this spring before it buds out.
Okay.
That'll make them worse. They like it as dry as possible, actually. So that's the best thing for them. And what was the other bulbs you said?
They said that they have bulbs and self-seeding seeds. Just curious when they can get those going. But it doesn't specify which kind, so we might have to double-check.
Depending on the bulbs, if it's a summer bulb like dahlias and calla lilies and that, you want to put them in a pot right now, get them growing, and then plant them out after the last risk of frost, okay?
Okay.
If you're going to plant garlic in that, just wait until the ground warms up just a little bit. As soon as the little shrubs start putting out a little bit of leaves at the base of the plants, that'll tell you that the soil temperature is warm enough that you can plant them right out into the ground.
All right, perfect. We're going to take a really quick break here, and then we'll get to more of your questions. You're listening to Garden Talk on 650 CKOM and 980 CJME. This is Garden Talk. I'm Erin McNutt here with Rick Van Dyvendyke from Dutch Growers. Rick, we have a caller waiting for us on the line here. It's Kathy in Prince Albert. Good morning, Kathy.
Good morning. How are you this morning?
Good, thanks. How are you doing?
Pretty good.
Good. What's your question for Rick today?
Number one, do primroses grow in Prince Albert area? And number two, where do I find them?
Yeah. Primroses, there is a hardy primrose, but it's you can get them. But mostly primroses you're going to see as a basically a house plant, okay? It's basically what I call throwaway flowering plant, okay?
Okay.
And so you can find them seasonally in the florist or garden centers as a potted plant, and then enjoy them inside the house. And sometimes you get them to rebloom and sometimes you can. But there is a hardy primrose, and you have to just check your local garden centers. I believe that we may have it this spring, but you can check, and I just can't remember whether we have it in stock or not, but this spring. But you can check even, you said you're Prince Albert?
Yes.
Yeah, there's not too many garden centers left in Prince Albert right now, so you can check with some of them there that they might even have it. I'm trying to remember the name of the garden center there. I think it's up on the main highway, number two there, right? So,
okay, yeah.
Up there by the PV Mart there. I can't remember what it's called, Braze or something like that?
Yeah, we're just fairly new to the area, so.
Yep, they may have something like that. Check with them, or even with the florist, they may have the houseplant variety for you.
Okay, because I know I've seen them in the wild in the Cypress Hills area.
Yeah, there is some native ones that are around, and so that's why you can get the perennial one, but the one you buy you'll see in the grocery stores and some of the shops, they're not a hardy one. They're meant for BC and that kind of stuff, not for here. Okay, so there's different ones. You need to find the hardy primrose.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Kathy.
Okay, bye-bye.
All right, we have some questions on the text line that we can get through here. This is from Kathy in the Battle Fords. We purchased a property in the Battle Fords recently. The large cotton Easter hedge spread thickly into the nearby poplar trees. Last summer, we cut them all down to the ground. What can we do to keep the branches from growing and keep the grass and poplar trees?
Oh, just keep trimming them. You can keep them whatever size you want. You could trim them 3 or 4 times during the summertime.
Okay.
Not a problem. You can just keep them pruned. You can keep them a foot high if you want all summer long, or you can let them grow back up to 4x4, whatever you want. Just keep pruning them, and as the new growth comes on in the summertime, just keep them pruned. That's other than removing them, that's the only thing you can really do with them is just trim them like a nice, tidy little hedge.
All right. This question is about raised garden beds in a backyard. What kind of soil mix do you recommend for a new raised garden? Topsoil, compost, peat moss, or potting soil? What works?
Yeah, if it's a raised bed, if it's smaller, like depending on the size of it, if it's only less than 3 feet wide, use soilless mix, okay? Otherwise, it'll go rock hard if you use topsoil.
Oh, okay.
If it's a bigger bed, like 6 feet wide or whatever, then you can start using regular topsoil. And it could be not much different other than it'll be warm up quicker in the spring to grow your garden in and stay warmer for the summertime and actually get a quicker garden.
Oh, okay.
You can use regular topsoil there, but if it's just smaller, like if it's only a foot wide or something like that, if you put regular topsoil in, you'll just have a hard rock that you won't even be able to grow anything in. So use a soilless mix, which if for vegetables, there actually is a vegetable and herb mix that's specially formulated for that.
Oh, okay.
And for vegetables, if it's just for flowers, then you can use an all-purpose soilless mix. There's lots of different varieties out there.
All right. This is a question about a raspberry patch. Looking to transplant to a different area, when is the best time to do that and what's the best way?
Yeah, just as soon as you can dig into the ground, get as much root as you can with each cane. And transplant them as soon as the frost is out of the ground and water them in, and they'll go like crazy again.
Okay. This is a kind of a second part to the question. They're in the Saskatoon area, and they're wondering, they would like to plant a micro clover in the lawn. How is the best way to seed it in the grass, and when's the best time to do that?
Okay, so you can do that basically when the soil temperature, when the leaves start sprouting on the rest of the trees around the yard or shrubs around the yard, basically, you can put it in. And then if you put it into the grass, best to thatch the grass, so rake the dry grass out first, okay? And then you spread your seed. It's a very fine seed, okay? So
okay.
Then spread your seed around with a little spreader on, get a little even a hand spreader.
Yeah.
Spread it around, and then rake it again so the seed goes down and gets in contact with the soil. If the seed sits on top of the thatch, it won't germinate properly and just die. It could just dry out, okay?
Okay.
So you just want to rake it so that you force the seed down to the soil, and then it'll come up and grow no problem.
All right. This is another lawn question from Devin in Regina. Is it too early to put lawn seed and some potting soil on the lawn? It's really patchy, and I'm wondering the best way to make it full.
Yeah, it's a little bit early yet because it's just going to sit. You can put it down there. It'll just sit there and not germinate until it's warm enough.
Yeah.
I mean, I put a lot of seed down in the end of October and let it germinate first thing in the spring.
Okay.
So it's not going to hurt the seed to sit there. You'd have, just like I talked about the clover, you just need to rake that seed so it gets down in contact through the thatch and onto the soil. That's the key, is you need to get down to the soil for it to germinate, and it will germinate once it warms up.
Okay. This is from Diana in the Momart area. We have a 40-year-old Walker Poplar shelter belt that's slowly dying off. We cut a number of them down last spring, and new growth is coming from the stumps. Would the new growth, if left to grow on the old stumps, become a viable tree? If not, can we trim the new shoots and replant a new tree, or could that be diseased too?
The problem is that on the stump, there could it had disease like the biggest disease that the Walker poplars will get was called canker.
Okay.
And it gets these almost like these little growths on the stems, and then they just rot and they break the tree breaks off at those spots, or everything dies up above them.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have part of the trunk there, the canker could be still in that part of the trunk and in the sap system. So it may be viable and it may not be viable. It all depends. I've cut them down and had some. I've just trimmed them up to one. The biggest issue can be, it's depending on how the sucker comes off the trunk, is that if it doesn't have a good solid attachment, you get a big wind and those things just split off. You know, it's called a water. I call them a water sprout, and so they're not really that strong if a big wind comes up. But otherwise, planting another one, even in between the other ones, right? If you're not planting them in the same spot, because it's pretty tough unless you get a stump grinder in or backhoe in or something like that to rip out that trunk. But otherwise, you can plant in between the other ones if you cut them down, and then you can kill off the other ones and then have the other new ones just come up in between, and that works well as well.
Okay, so a few different options to consider.
Yep.
We have a question about when in the central, north central part of the province is the best time to start detaching lawn?
North to north central. So
looks like they're in the Glasslyn area, I think they said.
Yep, so Glasslyn, you know, up near, up past Battleford or north of North Battleford area.
Mm-hmm.
So up there your temperatures are. You could start thatching any time that the ground is basically not frozen anymore.
Okay.
So up there might be a little bit cooler up there.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would suggest you're going to be waiting to the last week of April.
Okay. So still like two-ish weeks or so.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. This is a quick question from the Melville area. Does the corn gluten or is corn gluten effective against wild chamomile? And do you use it the same way as you would for dandelions?
Yeah, it'll work against anything that germinates a seed in the ground. Okay.
Okay.
If this weed grows by like quackgrass grows like a rhizome, just root spreading.
Yeah.
It does. It actually doesn't affect. It actually feeds them. It actually acts as a fertilizer. It helps them. But if it grows from if anything puts a seed down, then it'll stop that seed from germinating. It doesn't matter what it is.
Okay. We have a another question about lawns. I have not disturbed the lawn yet. It is quite compressed from snow weight and snow mold is present. Since it's a bit cooler now, should I wait to disturb it with light raking?
No. If you got snow mold, light rake it as soon as you see it, and that'll disperse it. So don't wait, because then that just goes right down and affects even the root system. So just lightly rake it and get some air into the grass. Doesn't matter what the temperature, even if it's just put a hat on there and get out there in the snow and rake it up a little bit.
All right. We have Laureen in the Unity area waiting for us on hold here. Good morning, Laureen.
Good morning. I was wondering if I can put groundskeeper fertilizer on my Siberian cedars, and do I dissolve it?
You don't have to dissolve it. You can dissolve it if you want, but otherwise you can just spread it over the surface. And there's two different types of groundskeeper if you want. Okay, there's one with phosphorus and one without phosphorus. I would suggest when you're putting it down, use the one with phosphorus in it, and put it down there and just spread it like you would lawn fertilizer, and then it'll be perfect for those. Just make sure you can water it in. That's the big thing.
Okay.
If you can water it in, you don't need to mix it in a bucket. You know, and dissolve it. You can just put it right on top of the ground, and so then that's not a problem.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thanks, Laureen.
Bye.
All right, we're going to take a quick break for news here in just a moment, but we still have a lot of time to go. If you have questions for Rick, you can give us a call or a text at 1-877-332-8255. We're now into the two-hour shows of the growing season, so still about half an hour to get your questions in. And, of course, you're listening to Garden Talk on 650 CKOM and 980 CJME. Listening to Garden Talk. I'm Erin McNutt here with Rick Van Dyvendyke from Dutch Growers. If you have a question for Rick, you can give us a call or text at 1-877-332-8255, and we'll do our best to get you an answer for that. We have Teresa waiting on the line for us, Rick, so we'll jump right in. Good morning, Teresa.
Hello.
How are you today?
I am fine.
Good. What's your question for Rick?
Well, I have a problem getting my compost to be compost.
Okay.
I have a, it's 1 meter, it's a black plastic, whatever, and it's a meter high by about a half a meter all around each side. And I have never been able to open the bottom and take out this nice, beautiful shovel of black soil.
Okay, so what two things, or there's three things that compost needs to make compost, okay?
Mm-hmm.
One is needs water,
mm-hmm.
okay? But it also needs air.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so the best thing to do is if you have a thing that is get what you call as you should need to turn it a bit. Okay, so sometimes you can buy it's a probe that has two little flapping thing, almost like fingers on them.
Yeah.
So when you stick it down into the compost, it goes in like an arrow. But when you pull it up, the arrow edges pop out, and when you lift it up, it basically turns it. Okay.
I have one of those, and it didn't, like, I was not able to even, I don't know, maybe it's just that my strength and my arms aren't helping me, but I do have one of those, but it didn't seem to do that much for me. I still don't have this beautiful soil.
Yeah, so then the last thing you need to do then is go to your garden center and pick up some compost accelerator, it's called.
Accelerator.
Basically, what it is, it's a bunch of bacterias
uh-huh.
that you add into your compost. You can poke your little bar down there and get somebody to help you poke a bar, and then pour some down into the holes down to the bottom.
Uh-huh.
And then it puts air in there, but it actually adds the little microorganisms and the bacterias in there, which helps break down the compost three times faster than normal.
Well,
okay?
Is that going to be like? Is that for sure, or maybe?
It's a for sure. It's amazing. It works huge.
You mean I might be able to handle that one?
Yep. You can. The only problem is you need to poke some holes into it. So you might need to get somebody to give you a hand to poke some holes into the compost pile. So you get
oxygen. Add also
into
garden soil.
What's that?
Do you have to add garden soil, like garden and different kind of like green and brown waste?
You can never put one type of anything in a composter. Like, don't put all grass and then they won't expect it. Even put little layers of topsoil in them, because topsoil has all the microorganisms to break it down quicker as well, okay?
Well, I've done that too, but...
Yeah. So add your compost accelerator. It'll be huge. It'll turn it over, but you have to get somebody to help you to turn it, okay? That's the big one.
Yes, I thought that, I can't do that anymore.
Yeah. Get somebody to give you a hand. You only have to do it a few times a year, and just get somebody to help you to turn it for you.
And it should be done by fall then, if I do it in spring.
Yep, absolutely.
Well,
no
I problem. Have to look for this miracle, I guess.
Okay.
And also, I have a problem with all these different kinds of fertilizers. Like, I was given a bucket of 20-20-20, and I don't know what to do with it. I don't know. What is it good for?
Yeah, it's good. 20-20-20 is good for, it's a general purpose. It's good for all your plants out there. The only thing I wouldn't use it so much for is in the garden, but I would definitely use it in all your shrubs and trees and flowers and perennials. And there's instructions on the side of the pail that tells you how many tablespoons per liter of water.
Mm-hmm.
And just mix with water and pour it around your plants. Do that once every 2 to 3 weeks.
Oh, 2 to 3 weeks.
You'll have great plants. Just go by the instructions on the side of the container.
And for how long in this?
Right from about May the 10th, and then I like stopping around July 15th to August 1st.
Okay, July 15th.
August 1st, that's
August
when you stop.
First. Okay, then another thing, I have saved my ground, like used coffee grounds.
Yep.
I like, what kind of food value is in that?
Well, there's all kinds. Anything organic is any kind of food value. It's amazing. So just spread them. Don't dump them in this one spot. Spread them out evenly and let it work into the soil. It'll work perfect. And all those kind of things are great organic compounds to add to your soil all the time. Just don't throw them in the garbage. Put them into the garden. Perfect.
Well, I used it on my lawn when I had aerated, and then the holes are there, and I thought, well, just to keep the holes open, I just threw these coffee grounds in there, and I didn't know if that was a good idea or not.
Absolutely perfect.
That's okay?
Yeah, perfect.
Okay, then do you have time for one more question?
Yep.
Okay, then I have a maple tree that is about 40 years old, and
the wind has broken off branches here and there, and it was growing quite low, and so we did do the trimming one time. And now I've got branches on there that are over an inch in diameter that have to come down in July, I guess.
Yes, in July.
But I'm wondering, do they have to, do you have to use pruning paint on them?
No, if they're only inch in diameter, you don't have to use pruning paint. Only
probably
if
more than an inch, I would.
Yeah, no, 2 inches or more, then you can use pruning paint or paste.
If it's two inches or more.
Yeah, under
more
that, don't need it. It'll actually heal quicker if you don't put it on.
Oh, then don't do it on that. And then what about on evergreens? Like, is our
same thing. Prune them. You can prune evergreens now or again in July and August.
But you don't paint on them either?
As long as they're under 2 inches, just leave them. Don't put anything on them.
Anything under 2 inches is fine.
Under 2 inches. Yeah, just leave them.
Okay, I think I have that now then. Thank you very much.
All right, thank you so much.
Sure.
Bye now.
Bye.
All right, we have Mavis on the line in the Regina area. Good morning, Mavis. How are you?
I'm good.
Good. What's your question for Rick?
I've got a tall hibiscus braided tree that I had outside last summer.
Yep.
I brought it in for the winter, and it kind of lost all its leaves last year, but it's getting leaves again. But I want to cut it back, and I'm just wondering how much I should cut it back.
You can cut it back basically 25 to 30%. If you wish, okay?
Okay.
Up to, okay? Anything you want to trim a little bit, but you can take it back at least 25%, you'll have way more blooms if you do that. They'll love it, and now's the time of the year to do it.
And I transplanted it, like, last week because it was so root-bound. Is it okay still to cut it back?
Yep, absolutely. Perfect time.
Okay.
Perfect time.
That's good. Thank you.
Thanks, Mavis.
Bye.
Okay, we have Frank on the line now. Good morning, Frank. What's your question for Rick? Frank, can you hear us?
Yeah, how are you?
Good, thanks. How are you doing today?
I'm doing terrific.
What's your question for Rick?
I'm having troubles this year for the first time in many years with seeded peppers. I have about 14 of them that are seeded, and I noticed that there are a few of them where the leaves are turning yellow and wilty. And
yep.
It's not all of them. I'd probably say it's... maybe 40%, 50% of them, and they're about anywhere from 3 to 4, 4.5 inches tall already, and I'm wondering what I've done wrong or what I can do to correct it.
Okay, so two things we're going to do is give them, they need lots of light, okay?
Yep, they're in grow lights.
Yeah, oh, they got grow lights?
Yep.
Okay, perfect. And what are you using for fertilizer?
Plant starter stuff. It's I can't remember. It's plant prod. It's for seedling fertilizer.
Yeah. Okay. So now you need to switch to more of using organic vegetable fertilizer now.
Okay.
Because now you need to give them all the other micronutrients like boron, zinc, magnesium, all that kind of stuff. Okay. Iron.
Okay.
And that
okay.
that your plant starter doesn't have that. Okay.
Okay.
And so you need to start feeding them now, and that's why they're turning chlorotic, more yellow for you. Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
And so, but you don't need a high nitrogen and you don't need a high phosphorus. You don't need those two numbers that high, okay?
Yeah.
So get an organic which has all the other micronutrients in it, and then the plants, but a little bit of nitrogen, a little bit of phosphorus, but not very much, and then they'll be fine.
Okay, so an organic vegetable fertilizer.
Yep, perfect. And
yep.
use one that you can mix with water. Don't use a slow release. Okay,
yep.
You can use a slow release in the garden later, but right now you want something that's more fast-acting.
Okay, and then can I use that for my tomatoes? Well, all of my tomatoes have germinated now, too, and they're about 2 inches high. They don't have any true leaves yet, but...
Yeah, you might want to wait till it gets the first true leaves, but you can use the same fertilizer.
Okay, perfect. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Frank.
Okay. All right, take care.
Bye now.
Bye now.
We're going to take a quick break, and then we will get to Jocelyn, who's waiting on the line for us. You can give us a call or text at 1-877-332-8255. This is Garden Talk on 650 CKOM and 980 CJME. Good morning. This is Garden Talk. I'm Erin McNutt here with Rick Van Dyvendyke from Dutch Growers. Rick, we've had Jocelyn waiting on the line for us for quite a while, so I think it's time to dive right in. Good morning, Jocelyn. How are you?
I'm good, Erin. How are you today?
Good, thanks. What's your question for Rick?
Hi, Rick. I have
a big backyard that had two very, very mature poplar trees. Not the tall, skinny ones. These ones were at least a meter in diameter, and they were starting to die off, and big branches were falling. So we cut them down and then ended up a couple of years later getting the roots ground out. Now, I know this root system is really expansive because we didn't kill the trees first, and they germinated throughout the whole backyard, including into my neighbor's yard, and some even popped up in the front yard. I think the dead roots under the ground now are starting to, well, the roots underground are starting to die, and I'm getting mushrooms popping up all over the place, and I don't know what to do.
Okay, the mushrooms are basically there because they're feeding on the root, right?
Yeah.
So the only way you're going to get rid of that is you have to get rid of the decaying roots, okay? So the best way to do that is just leave the mushrooms there if you can handle them, because they're feeding on the root and making them go away quicker, okay?
Okay.
The other thing you can do is aerate those areas where the roots are, whether you see the mushroom lines, okay? And then you can aerate them, and then you can, with the garden fork, and then you can actually put some compost accelerator in there to help break them down quicker.
Okay.
The bacteria will rot the wood even quicker, and it's, the faster you rot the wood, the quicker the mushrooms will go away, because there is no chemical you can use on mushrooms to make them go away.
Okay.
So the only thing you can do is help get rid of it quicker. And leaving the mushrooms there will actually make them go away quicker.
Okay. I know that they're quite expansive. We dug down about 3 feet under to see what was going on, and there was a root that came off of it that was about 6 inches in diameter, but they go every direction. I'd have to destroy my whole backyard. I mean, it's already pretty bad anyways, but.
Yeah, just like I said, you don't have to dig them up. Just garden fork it and just put some oxygen, water, and either a compost accelerator or some more fertilizer to help break it down quicker. And that's all you need to do. And just keep doing that a few times during the year, and it'll make those roots rot quicker, because it's going to be a little while. If it's that big in diameter, it's going to take, it's like having a 2x4 underneath the ground. It's just going to take some time to rot it.
For sure, for sure. Okay, so we'll do that, and hopefully I'll see if I can get on top of things.
And it's going to take a few years, okay? It's not going to happen all overnight.
Okay, so if those mushrooms pop up, do I just let them stay there?
You can let them stay there, but if they really bother you, just pick them, because otherwise they just keep spreading more spores and then grow more mushrooms. So if you don't want them there, pick them. Otherwise, if you don't mind them, leave them there, because they help break it down, the compost, bigger, quicker.
Yeah, I don't mind them. Well, I mean, they're not great, but my dog eats them, and I don't think that's probably the best thing to do.
Yeah. Then just pick them, but then you need to do other things to break it down, and using a compost accelerator will help make that root go away quicker.
Okay, that sounds great. I will give it a shot.
Great.
Thank you.
Good luck.
Thanks.
All right, we have Mary Lou waiting for us on the line here. Hi there, Mary Lou. What's your question for Rick?
Hi. Like one caller that was on previously stated about having deer in town. We've got about 8 that are live in town all year round. I did put tarps up around my Brandon cedars. They actually made holes in the tarps to eat my
bees. They smell them. So, they smell them. I know.
Yeah. So would a product like Bob X help?
Yes. Bob X works good because it's a great one to deter them. They don't like the smell of it. Okay. And so that works well. Blood meal works okay too. They don't like the smell of blood meal around them, but you have to reapply it after new snowfalls and that kind of stuff. That's the same thing with the Critter Ritter or Bob X, you know, either one of them. But it works very well. But otherwise, putting a chicken wire fence around them for the winter time is probably the best.
Well, I had actually put the tarps up, and then I had even put up like the orange fencing all the way around. No, they still got through.
Determined bunch.
They're determined. I up at the lake, I had elk that were trying to get through them, and I just kept putting the snow fence around them. I was able to keep them, but just a way of determining, you know, keep them away. But Bob X will work good.
How often do I have to reapply it then? So every time it rains, or is it there a certain length of time?
Yeah, well, they're not going to eat them in the summertime. They're only going to come in the wintertime.
They're in the yard. They're in the yard now already.
There's nothing for them to eat yet, okay? But normally in the summertime, they'll go after your garden before they go after the cedars, okay?
Okay.
But it's the wintertime when
last year.
It's the wintertime they do the most damage. So you need to put that Bob X on whenever the temperature gets above zero in the wintertime. Go out there and spray a little bit more on again.
Okay. Okay, so mainly use it in the wintertime then, you're saying?
Exactly. That's the only time it really affects them bad. They'll nibble a little bit on in the summertime, but not very much. They'll rather go after your vegetables or flowers in the summertime rather or the grass rather than the cedars in the summertime.
So then in the winter, so once it gets to fall.
Exactly. That's when they'll affect them the most.
Okay, what about like all the amigo pines in that in town that they've eaten all the needles right off as far as they could reach? Are we best off just to prune that back, or will those needles eventually come?
They'll put out new growth out of it. Mine are just sticks right now. I have an old 20-year-old amigo pine in my yard. That's the second time now they've eaten them. No needles left at all. Nothing. Just sticks sticking out of the ground.
Yep,
so I'll fertilize that every 3 weeks from, you know, May 10th until July the 15th. And it'll take me a couple of years, but I'll get them to fill back out again.
Okay, good. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay, good.
Bye now.
Bye.
All right, we have a couple texts that we can get to before we have to end the show for the week. Colleen in Moose Jaw is curious what fertilizing numbers would the alfalfa log pellets be equivalent to?
The alfalfa log pellets, it's a lower nitrogen, so it's only like, I think it's about 4 or 5 maximum in nitrogen. And then it has a lot of phosphorus, potassium, and then it has calcium, is pretty high on calcium. And then magnesium, all the boron, a whole bunch of other. And then also what the biggest one of alfalfa pellets has, it has a bunch of microorganisms in it.
Okay.
That are natural. And those microorganisms are chewing on all this other green matter and then pooping out, you know, what it eats.
Yeah.
And then that's what the plants will feed on.
Okay.
It's quite amazing how that whole, you know, the whole ecosystem works. And the one thing about alfalfa will do is it'll just enhance that microorganism so that you get the whole system working the way it's supposed to work in nature.
Just kind of kicks it into high gear.
Absolutely.
This has been our first two-hour show of the season. We'll be back next Sunday with Rick Van Dyvendyk from Dutch Growers. You've been listening to Garden Talk on 650 CKOM and 980 CJME.